Welcome back. In the last episode, we built the mental model, the split between the control plane that Azure runs and the nodes that you run. Today, we make the nodes half real. We're going to provision an actual cluster from the command line, connect our tooling, and then design the node pools that everything else will run on. And I'll flag the decisions you genuinely cannot undo later, so you get them right the first time. Let's start with the good news. The entire Hello Cluster loop is just 4 commands. And the shape of it is worth memorizing because you'll type it hundreds of times. First, you create a resource group, which is just the logical container that will hold the cluster object. Second, you run the AKS create command, which creates the cluster itself along with its first node pool, and by default it uses a system-assigned managed identity. Third, you run the get credentials command, which downloads the cluster's access details and writes them into your local Kubernetes configuration file. And fourth, you run the get nodes command to confirm you can actually talk to the API server. That's it. Group, create, credentials, confirm. A few things worth internalizing about that flow. The AKS create command defaults to 3 nodes if you don't say otherwise. Some quick starts use just 1 node to save money, but for production, you want 3 or more. The very first node pool is always a system mode pool, and its operating system must be Linux. You cannot create a Windows-only cluster. The get credentials command merges cluster access into your local kubeconfig file, and after that, your command line tool just works against the cluster. And you can confirm the cluster came up cleanly by checking that its provisioning state reads succeeded. Now, a cleanup warning, because this one bites people. Remember that hidden node resource group from last time, the one whose name starts with the letters MC. If you delete the cluster's resource group, Azure also deletes that hidden group and everything inside it, the virtual machines, the disks, the load balancers, all of it. That's exactly what you want when you're tearing down a lab. It's a catastrophe if you put unrelated resources in that group. So keep that group for AKS only. Let's move to the heart of today's episode, the design of node pools. Every cluster has at least one system node pool, and you add user node pools for your applications. Let me contrast them clearly. The system node pool hosts the critical cluster pods, things like cluster DNS, that is the domain name system service, and the metrics server. It must run Linux. It needs at least 2 nodes, though 3 is recommended, and each node needs a reasonably sized virtual machine, at least 4 virtual CPUs, and 4 gigabytes of memory, with no burstable B-series machines. A user node pool hosts your application pods. It can run Linux or Windows, and it can even scale down to 0 nodes when idle. The system pool cannot, because it always needs at least 2. Why bother separating them at all? Because if an application pod runs on the system pool and eats all the resources, it can destabilize cluster DNS and break name resolution for the entire cluster. That's a very bad day. Isolation prevents one bad deployment from taking down everything. So the memory hook is, the system pool keeps the cluster alive, the user pool keeps the app alive. Now, just labeling a pool as system makes AKS prefer to schedule system pods there, but it does not keep your apps out. To truly dedicate a system pool, you add a special taint. A taint is a marker on a pool that repels any pod that doesn't explicitly tolerate it. The well-known taint for this is called critical add-ons only, set to no schedule. The system add-ons carry the matching toleration, so they're welcome, but your app pods don't, so they get pushed to the user pools. That's how you enforce a clean separation. This brings us to the 3 tools you use to control where pods land, and they work together. The first is mode, which is just whether a pool is system or user. It marks the pool's purpose and drives where system pods prefer to go. The second is taints, which repel pods, and you use them to reserve nodes, say a GPU pool or a pool dedicated to one tenant. The third is labels, which attract pods. A pod uses something called a node selector or node affinity to say, I want to run on nodes with this label. So to picture the full interaction, a pod needs a toleration to get onto a tainted pool, and it needs a node selector to choose a labeled pool. Taints keep pods away, labels pull pods in. One practical tip here. Always apply taints and labels to the whole pool, not to individual nodes. AKS replaces nodes when it upgrades or scales, and any settings you put on an individual node are lost when that node is replaced. Pool-level properties survive. So manage at the pool level. Now for the part one promised, the decisions you cannot take back. Some node pool properties are fixed at creation time. And to change them, you must create a brand new pool, migrate your workloads over, and delete the old one. The first is the virtual machine size. You cannot resize a pool's machines in place. The second is the maximum number of pods per node. That's also fixed at creation. The third is Windows support. The cluster needs a Windows profile defined at creation time, meaning you have to supply Windows admin credentials when you first create the cluster. If you created a Linux-only cluster, you cannot add a Windows pool later. You'd have to recreate the cluster. I remember this with a little phrase, SVM is forever. S for SKU, VM for virtual machine size, and M for max pods. Set them once or plan to recreate. A few other constraints worth knowing so nothing surprises you. All node pools use virtual machine scale sets under the hood. To run multiple node pools, you need the standard SKU load balancer, not the basic one. All pools must live in the same virtual network, and pool names are lowercase letters and numbers, up to 12 characters for Linux pools and just 6 for Windows pools. Let me pull the threads together. The create loop is 4 commands, group create, then AKS create, then get credentials, then get nodes. The first pool is a Linux system pool, and production uses 3 or more nodes on the standard tier. System pools run cluster services and need Linux, at least 2 nodes, and decent-sized machines. User pools run your apps, can be Linux or Windows, and can scale to 0. Use steer pods with mode for purpose, taints to repel, and labels to attract, always at the pool level. And virtual machine size, max pods, and Windows support are all fixed at creation, so get them right up front. Let me leave you with a couple of self-checks for the walk home. Which command writes your Kubernetes config file? The get credentials command. Can a user node pool scale down to 0? Yes, but a system pool cannot, because its minimum is 2. You want to reserve a pool just for GPU workloads. Do you reach for a taint or a label? A taint, to repel everything that doesn't belong, and you'd pair it with a label so the GPU pods can find their home. And here's the classic mistake to avoid. A colleague provisioned a pool with small machines at a low max pod setting, and now needs bigger machines and a higher pod density. Can they just update the pool in place? No, both of those are immutable. They must create a new pool with the right settings, migrate the workloads, and delete the old one. That's node pool design. Your cluster is now running, and the pools are shaped sensibly. In the next episode, we start putting workloads on those pools. We'll meet the trio that every administrator lives with: pods, deployments, and services, and we'll learn how to do rolling updates, rollbacks, and how traffic actually reaches your application. See you then.